In 5, 4.
Rhythm and wit.
Hey guys, how's it going? Nick Campbell here, and with me as always is
David Steele.
And we are
Rhythm and Wit.
Oh my god,
yes,
today.
So we're here. This is the Rhythm and Wit Podcast, episode 52. Yeah, we got a very special episode because we have
Julie Drake and Will Davis with us.
Back for the second time.
Yeah, how's it feel? Does it feel better?
Yeah, it feels great. Feel, I'm not here at
the
night.
Couch?
Huh? Yeah, then what's that night?
What I was here at night last time. Yeah, like, you know, I mean, this is first thing in the morning, and
right.
I love this. The only thing I've done today is walk my dogs.
So you got outside in the cold.
It sucks. And...
Well, the last time I was on the show, I had had like no sleep the night before,
yeah.
And so I was. Like, I watched the episode, and I was like...
You tell.
People are going to be like, what is she on?
I think, didn't you just get back from a big show or something like that?
I don't. Or, I don't even remember.
Yeah. I think I remember you telling us that, though.
I don't even remember, but I had had, like, no sleep. And parts of that episode, I was like, oh, God. Can I delete? Can I report this? But then also the...
Taken down.
But then the egotistical side was like, well, it's getting a lot of views.
Yeah.
Well, you're like one of our top views.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely was for a long time. I mean, we've had some that probably have. Last year, I always say this, was like, for whatever reason, Cody Troutman has like over 1,000 views on our, which no one's ever come close to. I don't know how he did it.
You know what? This is probably maybe not what Cody is doing, but I heard someone say, if I'm on a YouTube video, I just play it.
On repeat.
So when people go in to check it, it's like, oh, this has got, it's got 50,000 views.
Possibly. I don't know. He does have his own podcast, so maybe he's got some tricks that he's learned.
I know Cepeda, Liz and I have been just leaving it on and watching it.
You know? He just wanna
watch tried to
it.
Show it to my kid. He don't care. But we listened to it on the way home yesterday. But he was like... Man, this guy. I was like, what are you talking about? You don't even know this dude.
This is my friend.
Shouts out to Cepeda Cheeks.
What up?
It's comedy special.
But yeah, thanks for coming again, you guys. This has been great. We talked about having people, like, we wanted to have certain people back on, but it's like, we were talking about this earlier, but there's so many people that we still haven't gotten to. Sorry, we'll get to you at some point. But, you know, we've hit most of the OKC comics that we know, so... We wanted to have some of you guys back on, so this is a nice way to kind of pair people up and having more of a focused topic. And today's topic is...
Headlining. What's up?
Headlining.
What's up? We have my headlining show,
yes.
December 12th. You can go buy tickets now, nickcampbellcomedy.com. What's up, guys? but yeah, I'm doing a little headlining show, and I'm hoping that I can steal your... experience and information.
Yeah,
is that possible?
Knowledge.
You're gonna get a lot of information from me because I hate headlines.
Really? Why do you hate headlining?
There's so much pressure. We'll get into it, but there's just a lot of pressure in closing the show, especially if you get grouped up with some comedians that aren't bought in, and then they just kind of just kind of dog it. You know what I mean? And then you're stuck with this audience that really wants to leave.
Yeah, then because they have to set you up for success. And if they don't do that, then...
And like Nick was saying before we started recording, he was like, I'm thinking about having the show to be 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because I've been headliner or the last or however you want to phrase it at the end of a very long show. And I'd rather just go home.
Yeah.
I'd rather just... I mean, there was like one time that the show was running... It was on a Thursday. By the time I got up there, the show was already 1:40, and they had booked me to do 45.
Oh,
and I could see the audience was ready to go. And I'm like, I would rather just go home. And it was not fun.
So two and a half hours.
He's absolutely right.
Yeah.
The who you have before that goes on before you can make or break That was such a good point. Sorry.
Is it the buy-in? So you're talking about like the people who are on the show and they're like,
people on the show.
Yeah.
Like
that are there to do their best and not phone it in.
Yeah, phoning it in. Yeah. That's the term I was thinking
or
about.
Or not going way over their time.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like some people will get on stage and their first couple jokes won't go right, and then they just kind of like, well, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? And then they start tagging the audience, and it's just a really bad, and then it's hard for the second person to pick up off of that. And then it just, you know, or the second person takes that same energy and is just like, well, I guess I'll phone it in too. Mm-hmm. And then you're stuck with people expecting something like, I'm going to do five and get out of here.
I think what's worse than that, and this happened to me a few weeks ago, is when someone's closing joke doesn't land.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of just being graceful and going, saying something, the comic just kept going on.
They want to, like,
and
redeem themselves.
And they kept digging and digging and digging. And it was like that scene in Rocky IV. He's like, throw the damn towel!
But they're up there living by Cobra Kai rules. No mercy, baby. I'm going to get this joke out.
I was really about to go, throw the damn towel! Get him off the stage, you know? And it just kept getting worse because the closing joke didn't end, so they thought, well, my closer didn't end, so I'm going to do about 10 more this month.
Yeah, they want to, like, get that in on the big laugh.
Yeah, and it just kept getting worse, so.
Your host can mess it up, too. You know what I mean? If your host is doing too much in the in-between.
That's kind of a way, I mean, a good host can kind of help solve that issue if, like, somebody does something weird at the end of a set or, you know, and then the host can come back and be like, that was weird, wasn't it? You know, and kind of point that out and then get the audience back to kind of a even playing field type.
That's one thing I love about hosting the mic at Bricktown is because sometimes someone will go up there and do something so weird, and then my usual go-to line is, stay off drugs.
I like to say, you can say all of that again, but to your therapist.
These are inside thoughts. Yeah.
I like to keep that open mic rolling, because it's 20 people. You know what I'm saying? So you don't got a lot of time to get in there and say something real quick, and then let's go.
Yeah, that's good.
Sometimes, like, they'll have a host that thinks they have to do time at the mic in between. And it's like, have you ever watched The Nature Show where someone's like throws a dart at the elephant and the elephant just goes down? I just want to have that dart just to make him shut up. Because if you're at the end of the mic list,
you're just ready to go up.
And the host gets up there and then grabs the microphone off of the stand and like, what are you doing, man? We're on number 16, bro.
What are you doing?
Dude, I'll go to the person running the light. I'll be like, hey, throw that light up.
Yeah. Hold to the host.
The worst is like when you have someone that's new, and it happens because that light at Bricktown is kind of hard to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I go by the clock now, not the light. Mm-hmm. But when someone who's never been on stage and they're just going on, and you see the light being waved,
waving
and then like you're hosting, so what I have to do is like I just do a slow clap and walk
out. Oh, that's brilliant!
But one time, this guy, we all started clapping, and he thought he was doing so well, and that's why we were clapping. Just kept going, and I'm like, well, that backfired.
Yeah. Dude, that's my favorite. Whenever somebody's like really hitting the light, like you'll see Will Burnson like jumping, I know. And, like doing like that. And then you'll go, oh, look, it looks like I got my light. I got one more minute.
No.
I'm about to wrap it up.
Yeah, let me wrap this up.
I like to creep on the stage.
Yeah.
And I tell people at the beginning, if you're getting the second light, you're going to see me creep up on the stage. And when I'm creeping up on the stage, it's time to like really wrap it up.
Oh, yeah, that's
I'm going to be behind you.
I think I saw Buchholz go up and be like, all right, Bricktown. You know?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he's got that loud voice, too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a professional move.
See, at the Looney Bin, when we would run the mic, we would just cut their mic off.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was her rule. Like, if they went 30 seconds over, cut the mic.
Right.
And so that, I mean, or if they started, you remember that rule, if they started cussing too much, cut the mic.
Cut the mic.
Yeah. So I mean, there's different ways to do it.
Yeah.
And they used that breakdown play music. Did you say that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Curb Your Enthusiasm music. Yeah. Yeah.
They started playing Evanescence at one point. I was up there jamming. I was like, yeah, hold up. Hey,
can you run this line? I want to hear the rest of the song.
Wake me up. Save me.
Dude, my son was singing that song. We were at work the other day, and he goes, he's singing that, wake me up. And I'm in the back. I'm like, wake me up. He's like, you know that song? I was like, dude.
No. What?
Dude, MTV was back in the day. Yeah. You know? We all know that song.
I got to tell you a funny story. It's a little off subject. I was on a road trip with John Wallen. Mm-hmm. And the way up, we were going to Missouri, and I was playing Lithium, which is all Rage Against the Machine, mm-hmm. Smashing Pumpkins, Primus. And he's
was the channel, radio
Julie
channel.
Drake, you know these bands, and I'm like, my generation's made them popular.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, man.
Like, we're the ones that are the reason you're listening to mm-hmm. it. And he couldn't believe it. It was like my kid discovering that I'm kind of cool, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing, is you can start visiting these old folks home and really start getting into what they're getting into now. I feel like you walk in there, you hear a little bit of Smashing Pumpkins, you know, mixed in with the Bing Crosby.
Whoa. Smashing Pumpkins ain't old folks home music.
That's grocery store music.
You know what I'm saying? You know how long I'm staying in the grocery store if Smashing Pumpkins come out? Tonight? What?
Yeah. Oh, you're right. You're right. My bad, guys. All right. I mean, I'm working in a maybe old folks home. I know what's in there, but it's good. It's cool. They look a lot like you. There's a
what?
I'm just playing.
Listen, black don't crack and grease don't crease.
Come on now. She got black in her. You know what I mean?
No, I've had black in me.
Oh yeah, my bad. Not really. That was recent.
Yeah.
Did y'all know that Billy Corgan? Did y'all know that Billy Corgan and Bill Burr are brothers?
No, they're not.
Yep. Let's move past that, but look it up.
But they kind of look pretty close to their dad. Mom or dad?
Their dad was a douchebag.
So they're half brothers.
Yeah, they're half brothers. Okay. If you look at them, they look just alike.
They do look. I know what you're saying. That's crazy. So they're brothers?
Yeah, and how
they figured that out?
Howie Mandel. They knew it, but they just kind of kept it a secret. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Howie Mandel had them on his show together.
And the dad named them both Bill?
Bill, yeah.
What? I guess that's easy to keep the name straight.
We were talking about Smashing Pumpkins. All my kids are Bill. Every time I snap my fingers.
Which this year, like the Smashing Pumpkins growing up was like one of my all-time favorite bands. And so it's so cool to me that like now like Billy Corgan is on TikTok and he responded to one of my comments.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, I can die happy now.
That's great.
Because that's what I like. I hate social media, but I love it because it can put you in such close proximity with people that like you.
Yeah, idolize or grow up with.
You can really see where your bands are playing and when they're going to be. And that's the beautiful thing about, because I don't want to see, no disrespect to any of these kids these days, but I don't want to go to Eclipse concert. You know what I mean? I just can't stand that long, and I can't be around that many rowdy kids. Mm-hmm. It's just,
Oh, my God. I realized how old I am about a year ago when my daughter and her husband bought me floor tickets to Hozier. And about 2 hours in, I was like, I got to sit down.
Somebody bring me a chair.
But I can't do it. I got to put on like the fluffy New Balance or something to go to these days.
Well, get the thick socks on.
That's why I like comedy, dude. Like you said, hour and a half at the most. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you're in, you're out. You got the rest of your night.
Yeah.
You know?
Get me in, get me a snack, make me laugh, and get me up out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Music, I mean, it was 3 hours. Yeah, hanging out all night and waiting for me.
I mean, that's like whenever, because I've played a lot of shows over the years, and it's like, I used to like it, but it's like now, it's like, when you play a show, you might have to, if you're in a band anyways, not just going to a concert, it's a little different, but if you're playing it versus like being a comic, you have to get there early to load in and do the set. It's like, so you're getting there like 6 p.m., maybe 7 p.m., and then you're leaving at midnight, you know, or after. So
you
got to
carry a bunch of stuff and carry gear. Stuff. Nah. Man,
and then
you're
and only to get up and play for 45 minutes, maybe, you know. It's like,
it'd be the loadout that would make me explode, probably.
So, yeah,
I'm tired.
But then you don't probably do as many shows as a band as you do comic sets either. So it's like you might play once or twice a month versus doing four or five or more shows a month.
Well, that's a benefit too. Is like the shows are more malleable, so you can be like, "Hey, can I jump on?" It's like, "Yeah, yeah, 5 minutes."
It's a lot easier. And booking shows versus booking comic, booking music is way more difficult. Yeah. Especially getting people's schedules, because you're dealing with like four or five people in a group,
yeah.
and different, and yeah. all of their schedules.
Yeah,
and they're all only making $20.
Yeah, so they have to really like it.
Split that 50.
Yeah,
but you really gotta love music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think you really gotta love comedy.
But yeah, I think the experience though is so, for me, for so long, it was so worth it, because there's nothing like getting on a stage and playing songs and just being with your best friends that you play with. You know, it's like, it was the best feeling in the world, and nothing compared to. I'm sure it's similar for comedy, but even comedy, you don't get that much time. Versus music, you know,
yeah.
I feel like, so it's probably you want to chase it more from comedy. Music, it's like after doing a great show, like once I'm good for a month, you know, it's yeah. like I can kind of take some time off and then come back and do it again next month. But
that's the complete opposite in yeah. comedy, because like yeah. once I do a really, really good one, I'm like, I need another one.
Yeah.
But then you do a shitty one, and you're like, I just want to sit out.
Yeah.
I think it's over. I'm going to go see my kids from now on.
Yeah, somebody told me, you're going to quit. I think it was Brad Chad Porter that told me that. He was like, you're going to quit like 10 times.
Yeah, so, once a month.
Yeah. There have been times sure. where I've been driving home from a show that did not go well, and I'm like, I should just jerk the wheel.
Yeah. Jerk the wheel. You know what I'm saying? I'm 40 and dude, this is it.
Just sitting in a car with music going, whatever. Just, closing time. I call Liz, baby, it didn't go good.
I mean, there's times where I've gone over the line, you hear, dick, 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 you know those.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, get back. Yeah. Do, do, do. Okay, I'm just like going back and forth. And I'm like,
it sounds good.
Try to make it
yeah.
quick reminder of what could be.
Yeah.
Daddy, what's that?
Yeah.
I gotta get off the phone,
you
baby.
You take the kids?
My kids wouldn't. They'd be like, "What's your PIN code to your bank card?"
Hey, don't get off yet. How's your situation
know,
with your will?
I know. Are you sure not to get life insurance anywhere? Yeah.
Call Leo.
Yeah.
All right. So we are talking about the headlining show.
Yeah,
I've got some questions. And
topics.
I guess I'm doing a little headlining show December 12th. If you guys want to come out, you guys are definitely going to be there. You're definitely going to be there. You're going to be hosting. And I'm going to beg you real good.
No, Nick doesn't book me on his show.
Oh, yeah, we're going
to
do this right now?
upstage him.
Yeah. I just book people I like. You know?
Ooh, there it is.
No, I'm just saying. No, I go through rotations. You know, I go through like rotations with people. And then you're usually at the beginning of the year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, but also I'm in Wichita that night with Cody Troutman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, dude, that's fun. Yeah.
It's okay. December 12th.
Yeah. But yeah, so a few things. How long have you guys been doing comedy? We'll start with you, Julie.
It's 10 years, but I always joke with people and say it's actually 5, because when COVID hit, and I always tell people this, I had to, like a lot of people, I had to start all over because everything I'd built up for 5 years, minus the loony bin, got destroyed.
Yeah.
I had to reset so much. And then when we came back, the jokes we were doing before were not hitting. Mm,
yeah. So you kind of have to figure out the world again a little bit.
We had to figure out the world again. And so we had to write anyways. But it's been 10 years.
Right.
But COVID definitely set me back pretty, like a lot of people. It set me back pretty good.
Yeah. At least it's not like you're the only one. I'm sure everybody had to deal with that in some way and kind of figure it
out. We all did, for sure.
Oh, yeah. There were some of the comedians that are doing big things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was following them on social media, and one of them was just sitting on his porch outside. Just you could see it in his face.
Yeah.
He was not handling it well. Because stages are his life.
Yeah, you know? Tough.
So.
For sure. I mean, that definitely affected me, too, just with music. Because, everything I was building at that time just completely fell apart.
And you think about all the work you put into what you had built up, and then just to watch it just go, just get knocked over was very disheartening. To the point,
that's really what it is.
But yeah,
people are still messed up. I feel like, I mean, well, you said comedy before. I think we had this conversation before. People wouldn't go out of their way to try to heckle or talk too much.
Yeah.
But now it's almost expected.
Right? Well, that's so, because of the crowd work clips.
Yeah, social media is kind of people putting their videos on social media. They're successful videos.
Because, I mean, but people had to do that because you had to pivot to from not being able to go out and do live shows. It's like, well, now you have to put comedy on the internet for people somehow, right? So I'm sure that kind of changed how we view comedians online.
Well, a lot of them quit doing it. They quit doing their comedy online because they were getting ripped off by TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of them started doing the crowd work clips so that the TikTokers wouldn't rip them off.
Yeah.
But there was a comic. His name is on the tip of my tongue. God, I can't think of his name.
Yeah. What does he look like? Kevin Spacey?
Rachel Bradley is his feature.
Is he white?
He's white. Christopher Titus. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Christopher Titus. He was at Bricktown like a year ago, and the crowd kept yelling out throughout his entire set. And so he goes, all right, stop. We're going to stop everything. And he goes, just so everyone knows, there's no cameras. There's no cameras. You're not going to be on Instagram.
Right.
And they said that there was no more shouting. So people are doing it thinking that the comic is recording and that they're going to get their 2 seconds of fame and be on TikTok.
What a wild way to want to go viral. Right. Yeah, I yelled out something about butt sex to the comedian, and he ripped me.
Yeah,
and then,
that's so weird.
That is weird, because then you're immortalized as like
as that person.
Yeah, look at Gary Owens and how he treats people. You know,
like, he makes you not want to say anything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I can't wait until his clips come out though. They're pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watch those pretty regular. Him and
Ari Spears.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I love the comedians that know how to do it. They can do it and then move on.
Yeah, Spears is looking for pussy. Every time. That's all he's doing. You dating this woman?
Yeah.
You got some big titties.
I mean, you know, I heard a female comedian say something not too long ago about that same thing, because they do the same thing. Like, when they're on stage, and if they're single and they're just kind of looking to mingle, when they're on stage, they make sure to say that they're single.
Yeah.
And they also make sure to find out what bar, or to let people know what bar they might be at.
Yeah.
Because if you see somebody's, she was like, if I see somebody's eyes light up when I say I'm single, and then I say what bar I'm going to be in, and I see that person at the bar, it's on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
See, I always assume that whenever a comic says that, like a female comic, I'm like, oh, you know, when I'm watching, I'm like, oh, she's cute. And then she says she's single. I'm like, oh, okay, that's, you know, I'm the one with the eyes. but then I find out later, it's like, oh, she's lying. They just lie because comics lie. But,
yeah,
you know,
comics lie.
To make it into the bit, right? Yeah. I mean, I get it, but it's just like, so I don't believe comics when they say they're single.
Oh, I say it, and then it's always the most disgusting.
Oh, yeah. You don't want, you try not to say it then.
It's like the stuff of nightmares is like, you want to come to my hotel room? And I'm like, no, no, I don't.
Like, hey, baby, you like Captain Crunch?
I know.
Random shit.
He's like thinking about it for the whole time you're up. What am I going to ask her?
Yeah, what?
I
come with something
you
cool.
Walk into your car by yourself?
You ever seen The Goonies on DVD?
I got some extra clips and stuff. You got extras on there?
This episode of Rhythm and Wit is brought to you by buymeacoffee.com/rhythmandwit, where you can go and make a $5 donation or possibly more to Rhythm and Wit. It is our way of raising money here on the podcast. And what you do is go on to buymeacoffee.com/rhythmandwit. Check out the link in the description of the video, and then what you do is you can make a donation, which is a cup of coffee. You can make a donation for one cup of coffee, which is $5, 10 cups of coffee if you can afford it, which would be amazing.
$50.
So it kind of goes from there. And what you also do is when you make the donation, it will allow you to leave a message, and we will read your message here on the show. Just like Don bought 3 coffees, and he says, "Stay caffeinated, fellas."
Hey,
well, thanks, dear. Don. Yeah. Claybar has a comment. "You both rock for highlighting the local community. Keep on showing off what creativity OK has to offer."
All right.
So that's something we love
thank
to
you.
Do.
Claybar?
So, yeah.
Claybar.
So thank you to those two donations. And then, yes, if you make your donation, we will shout out your message here on the channel.
Yeah. So we'll say your name. It's super fun. So headlining.
You bring it back. Good thing you got these notes. Yeah.
I think we don't need them at this point. But no, so headlining. So what, as
we didn't get back to you. Sorry. Well, how long have you been doing comedy? About the same time, right?
I started in 2018.
Okay.
June 2018.
Oh, so about, yeah. I was thinking you're about 10 too, but getting there.
I mean, and Julie is probably, I can call Julie one of my day ones. Julie, right. And, Lenny Van Horn, shout out to Lenny Van Horn. But they saw me out there and kind of like scooped me up and kept me away from the BS. Mm-hmm. So
that's good. Yeah.
You know, and then my first couple big shows were with Julie and Lenny. So,
I saw Lenny when he first started way back. That's whenever I did my first set. Mm-hmm. And then I saw him. He had a jacket. And it's back when you could smoke at JJ's. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, like, dude, this guy's kind of cool, man. Like, he was sitting there smoking, doing some jokes. And then I was like, I'm going to do my turn. And I went up there. And then, the host was, I did a joke. And he goes, pah! And I was like, oh, I'm done. Like that.
Yeah.
But I shook Lenny's hand. It was cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now he's just a roofer. I was like, here's my electrical information if you could pass that around.
Somebody said they did a show with him not too long ago.
I did one.
Yeah,
I've seen him in the past couple of years for sure. Because, I mean, I haven't been around comedy since then. So
him and Marty will just pop out every now and again.
I just did a show with both of them at a VF.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with Jeremy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he asked me to do that show, but I was somewhere. Yeah. But I really like Jeremy, and I'm glad he quit for a while.
Yeah,
and I'm glad to see he's back. Yeah, he's a good guy, trying to
make it full time again.
Good.
Well, yeah,
good.
But it was good to see Marty and Lenny because they didn't. You could tell they were kind of they're more playing with the crowd. I mean, it was a light show, but I love it when people go off. That's for me, go off script and just you can see them because you can't not dial in. You know, you can't just because you see when some people do their stuff and they just go blank.
Oh, yeah. They're going to tell their jokes no matter what.
Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm not here right now.
I'm going to get through this routine and I'm out.
Mm-hmm. But I like it when people play around with their stuff because I mean, I feel like you guys, like everybody else, you know everybody's stuff so well. You're like, okay, I can kind of see what's going on. But as people, like Brandon's one, your one, where it's just like they're changing all the time. It's different all the time.
Yeah.
So
there's so many ways to tell. If you have a good joke,
you can.
There's so
get
many
into
ways
it.
To tell your good joke, and you got to tell it different to different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Or you should.
Yeah, you really should.
Yeah, I think that, but I do think that comes with doing it for as long as you guys have. It's like it takes a long time to figure that out and figure out how to even do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so what else you got for this year?
Sorry, there's so headlining. Let me see. What would you, when you set up to go headline? All right. What are you thinking? What are your thoughts? How are you preparing?
Well, you want me to tell you my first time I headlined
versus
now?
There.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
Because it's wildly different.
That's right here.
The first time I ever headlined was I was asked to do it at Bricktown.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa!
And I didn't feel like I was ready, but I didn't want to say no.
How long were you in?
5 years.
Okay.
So they asked me right after the pandemic, after they'd opened, and I was like, I don't know why. I was like, the whole time, I was like, I don't know why I said yes to that. So what I did, because I never headlined, and if you're going to do bad, you don't want to do it in your hometown.
Yeah.
Where comics are going to be there, where the club is going to see you.
It's like, it's probably better for if people are watching this and have the opportunity, I guess it is better to do it outside somewhere else to get it over with and kind of get through it and then maybe come back and do it here.
Exactly. So I took every joke I knew that I wanted to use and I wrote it on an index card and then I had them spread out, trying to figure out what order I wanted in. Because sometimes too many topics were in one area and I'm like, I can't talk about this for 20 minutes. Like the audience will get bored. So then I'm like, I kind of spread it out and like, it was like a puzzle. Like, okay, we're going to have a little bit of a lull here, but I can't have too many heavy hitter jokes at the end or at the beginning. And I noticed they were all, cause I was doing shorter sets at that time. So I was like,
and you're trying to figure out how to take all those short sets and
make them into a big set. How to spread out like the heavy hitter jokes that I know we're going to get a big laugh, spread them out where it makes sense. And so once I had that all figured out, then I would go home and run through every day so that I wouldn't forget where I was at. because I was afraid that I was going to forget where I was at. And then if you forget, then the whole thing kind of falls apart. And so,
and you don't use notes.
No,
you don't even know.
No, I've never taken a notebook on stage. I can't stand it. And anyways,
how does that look to you then? If somebody's taking a notebook on stage as a headliner.
As a headliner.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah. I've seen it a lot.
At Breakdown. Yeah. And he like read from it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing?
I'm like, you don't know your own jokes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so then I did the show and I did fine. But I have to say, I was really proud of myself because I remembered all the jokes. However, I felt like I was just reciting what I had remembered.
Yeah.
So it felt fine. It was a little wooden. When I went back and watched it, I felt like it was a little wooden, a little stiff, and I could see where I was more worried about remembering my jokes than I was putting on a good performance.
Yeah.
Where now, I shouldn't say this. Just like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know, what the crowd's going to be like. Sometimes I don't know what the host of their feature is going to talk about. So I keep myself very open.
So you don't do any prep. Is that what you're going to say? Versus where you, it's like the opposite of that first show. It's like you just don't even think about it at all.
I mean, the last time the last two times I headlined the Looney Bin, I just went up and winged it.
But I think that also going back to your experience, I mean, because I've seen it in other comics. I mean, I've seen you do this, I'm sure. But it's like when you see somebody that's been doing it 10 years plus and you're just like, they went up there. Because I always use the example, Evan Hughes. Like I saw him at Put a Cork in It on one of Nick's shows. And he was just so flawless. And I didn't ask him, but I assume that did that too. He just goes up and just whatever comes into his head is the show. It's like there is no prep, and it's just like he's been doing it so long that it's just things just come to him, and then it's just like that's what he's talking about, you know, because you've had that practice, I think.
Well, it's also like if I always watch the show if I'm going to go, whether you say headliner going up last, because sometimes there's topics the audience does not want to hear about.
Yeah, you take note of that.
Or there's people that have been pulled in for crowd work who don't want to be part of it. Or there's people that have been picked on the entire show, so I don't want to be the third. Or there's someone that said something out of line that they didn't like. But I will say I wouldn't say not prepared, but to being loose and open, everyone has said the same thing. Like because it looks like, A, I'm having fun. I'm in the moment.
Right.
Sometimes I might stutter or stumble over my words a little bit, but it makes it more authentic.
Yeah.
And the shows go so much better.
Yeah.
It just goes so much
better. I think people
better.
Can tell.
They
even
can
if
tell.
Even
yeah.
if even if you have a show that's really well practiced and like you said, and it's just as good, and it, you know, you have two shows that are good, but people can tell when it's more authentic versus more
more
structured and
And so when I'm up there having fun with it and just letting loose, it makes a huge difference. And I can feel it and the audience can feel it. And so first it was a little bit scary just to go up there with like no plan.
Yeah.
But it was also kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was fun. And so, but again, you have to make room. Sorry, I don't mean to take all the time. But that's where I started when I was doing the open mic at Looney Bin. I would never have a set prepared. I would kind of have an idea because I wanted to see what the crowd looked like and how they were responding to the people in front of me. Whereas there were people that were going up and doing just whatever they wanted to do and the audience be damned. And I'm like, no, you have to think about the audience.
Yeah, I think that's really a sign of a professional because it's like you're paying more attention to what's going on in the room versus what's going on in your head or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, the audience, I mean, if they're not there, we don't have jobs.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
My pre-show, thankfulness before I go on stage, I'm always thankful for the people in the seats. They're not there. We don't got
for
nothing.
Sure.
So do you? So you say that one of the things you like to do is kind of stay in the room, be in the room, watch the show, and then I like to go out there a little bit beforehand, just kind of get a feel for everybody. Maybe
talk
like,
to that
talk
crowd,
to a few people at the tables. Yeah. Like, what are you doing here?
Who let you in?
Is that a cowboy hat and a bolo tie?
You wearing Hey Dude? It's cold outside.
damn, Dave. but no, it was, I like going in there, and something that really breaks the suspension of the belief for me is if a comedian comes out and they say the same thing to a crowd where it's like,
exactly.
Hey, you're here, you got a weird face. Yeah, and we just talked about my weird face.
Exactly.
You weren't paying attention. Mm-hmm. And it completely breaks it. Like, that's one of the things, that, especially in a small room, I feel like it put a cork in it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I try to do that you told me when I first started was being in the room, trying to call something out in the room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you do really well, is you set yourself into that kind of vibe of the room and then just pick out something.
Right.
And play I get there it. And I take a few notes. You know what I'm saying? My hand is always full.
You always
notes.
Talk about the bathrooms.
Oh, yeah. And that's hot water. Needs to get hot when I turn it on.
Yeah, or the food, right? That's what the food. Whatever.
Is, you know what I'm saying? I had a quesadilla one time. And it was in my stomach as I was on stage. It was brick. It was a chicken and cheese quesadilla, and it was cheese. And you know what I'm saying? I was like,
mostly cheese.
I didn't sleep well that night. You know what I'm saying?
So that's what are you looking for when you're coming into the room, gauging the audience, gauging what in the room to play with.
It really something that everybody can relate, like something that people can relate to, or mostly the whole audience can relate to. Like one time there was, put a cork in it. There was a lady that was on a little push scooter because she had but she pushed the scooter in. I mean, she rode the scooter in. And then walked out to go get a drink. And I made sure everybody in there knew that.
Yeah, because everybody was thinking that same thing.
Yeah, it was like, okay, like, hi, FMLA. It's nice. You know what I'm saying? She's not even hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But something like that. And Julie said something about taking notes on stage. I do that to help remember my set list.
Yeah.
So I'll write a few notes on a piece of paper, but I go up there so everybody can see that I have the piece of paper and say, I just have a few notes for the venue. Cause this is my first time here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I
heard this was a place that...
You kind of call it out versus like trying to like hide it or something, like some comics or just... Yeah.
And then I sat it down on the stool and then I put my water or whatever near it. So if I go sip my water, I can see, make sure I'm still on track. But a lot of times, as Julie was saying, she doesn't really prepare, and that's kind of the same method that I have. I prepare, but I'm always prepared to be
pivot and
go somewhere else, because there's been times where I've had 30 minutes worth of jokes on my list and did seven of those minutes because I was just horsing around the whole time. You know what I'm saying? Or just finding things that were taking me into other jokes that I remember that, oh, this joke. Because like when you're up there, you're like, oh, I got this joke that I know is going to, that these people are going to love.
That's what I always think about. Like I said, when I was talking, bring up that example of Evan, it's like I could see him doing that. It was like he was probably pulling stuff out that he wrote like 5-6 years ago that he didn't even think about until that moment. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, this one joke.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's fun to watch comedians up there too. You can see the knobs turning in their head.
Yeah.
They'll notice something. Right? As soon as I'm thinking this, I'm gonna get to that.
Similarly with Brad Chad Porter too. I've seen he's very much like that. Anytime I get a chance to see him now, because he's very sparingly on stage, but. Yeah, I love watching him too, because he's definitely one of those where it's just he's told so many jokes over his life.
Yeah.
Like he can just pull any of them out at any moment.
he's not a, if something happens in the crowd, he's going to move on.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I did a longer set, he was the headliner. And I remember just watching him, and something happened in the crowd, and he didn't miss a beat. He like acknowledged it
and then just kept coming back on.
Because he said he doesn't like to be off of his time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Like me and Will did a show back in September or October. Remember when my car was messed up and you were like, you're driving so carefully.
Oh.
I can't remember where it was at. But so this is why I don't prepare for, I don't want to say it like I'm lazy, but we went to the show and I was supposed to do 45 minutes and the crowd did not, I don't know why they were there. They did not want to hear jokes. I was up there for 45 minutes just doing, just talking.
Yeah. Was that when the lady brought the chihuahua on stage?
Yeah.
I got a picture of Julie holding a chihuahua on stage.
I remember that.
They were they were drunk. Mm-hmm. They were like blitzed. They were drunk and they didn't, they were just yelling out throughout the whole show. So I thought, well, why do you material?
Yeah. And then, because that's the thing. It's like if you had spent all this time preparing and then it's like, you feel like you wasted that time preparing whenever it wasn't even
like. Can you imagine, Will, if I'd sat up there, if I'd sat up there and just done material,
just did jokes? You've been up there giving a sermon that nobody was paying attention to. Like, what is he talking about?
Yeah, I think that's
you got to keep. It's like they were drunks. They were bad kids. Mako told me you gotta hone in on the bad kids. Mm-hmm. You know what
I mean, it was 7 o'clock and these people were wasted. Were, I'm what like, what
it's noon?
It was with Anna Rhodes at
Rhodes. Is that the one out there? Yeah.
There was a
high school football game, and that city is big on high school football. So anybody that's not at the game, you gotta be.
They're tailgating.
You gotta be aware of.
So we talked about prep and how you like, hey, you didn't prep. But I feel like the prep is the weeks before.
Yeah, that's the years before. That's what I was going to say is like, I think that's the key is to like do it more, as much as possible and then get it ingrained in you so much that you don't need to prepare.
Yeah. Having a set is being prepared, but you know what I'm saying, just making sure you got something. So if it is one of those crowds where you could just run through your stuff, it's beautiful. But
if
you watch enough of the show and you've got 20 minutes in your back pocket and you're doing 30, right, you could pick on people and do all kinds of stuff before you even get to your set, because you've watched the whole thing. If they, you know, say you're as a host, you usually pick a few people, what's your name, kind of pick out some inconsistencies in the crowd, and if you just stick with that, usually everybody does. There's usually a motif or something that comes up regularly in a show too. Like, oh, we're picking on John right now. Like it was Parker at Comedy on the Spot last week. That was nuts.
Yeah, this everybody was talking about. He was like a part of the show at that point.
That's why I like those.
Yeah,
though.
But that's what I was just thinking about with Comedy on the Spot. It's like I feel like you've got the best, and people that do that show a lot is like that's the best practice for you know, because you're on the spot. You have to do everything that you're talking about with, because there you can't prepare for it. There's no set. You know, so it's like you have to rely on your wits and
I will say one thing that's helped me tremendously is and I was watching a podcast accidentally. Sometimes things just come on YouTube and I'm like, well, I guess I'm watching this now.
Just autoplay stuff. Yeah. It's like, okay.
And Bobby Lee said that like the first like 7 to 10 minutes of a set, he's just up there screwing around.
Right. Yeah.
And I have found that instead of going up and just doing like your pre-prepared set, talking about the city, talking about things that have gone on, talking about the venue, something that's organic for the first probably, I don't know, 5, 7, 10 minutes, whatever, shows the audience that you're just not up there reciting.
Right.
And it's especially talking about the town where they live in. I always Google the town that I'm at.
Try to pick out a fact or something.
Because the thing is that the number one thing that people like to talk about is themselves.
Right.
So their town is by an extension themselves. So, and it shows that you're dialed in and it
kinda
always goes well.
It helps them get on your side too, I think. It's
as
like
long
they
as you're
relate
not,
to you.
As long as you're not like super mean
or disrespectful. Don't be disrespectful to nobody.
Right. Yeah, don't be disrespectful to their town. Yeah.
They'll walk you up out of there.
They
will. Because that's the thing is like I've definitely seen the opposite of that happen, where it's like the comic goes on and they talk shit about the venue immediately.
Bad
and
idea.
It's just like,
bad idea.
You shouldn't, you know, it is like good to joke about the venue, but do it in a more.
Don't say anything that's gonna make the, especially if the owner is in there.
Yeah.
Don't say anything that's gonna make the owner rethink what they're doing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, as a producer too, if somebody comes up there and they're like, "What's this place? This place sucks," and then you go, "Oh, why are you people even here?"
Right.
Then you're sitting there like, "Hey,
because I've seen that happen." I feel like I've seen this happen with Nick, where like the comic will talk shit on Nick, and then everybody's like, It's like, that's our friend. You know, like, that's our guy. You know, it's like, you can't, like, and then their whole set is just garbage after that. Because the audience, it's like, you've gotten them. You have to get them on your side, I think.
Yeah, we used to do a mic at, Caleb
Collins?
Oh, yeah. Fairweather Friends.
Fairweather Friends. Yeah. And his opening set said, don't do any racist homophobic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was kind of like Yoko. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do any of that. So when people would get up there and they'd say something going against the grain, the audience would just shut down almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, good luck.
Well, the host is the liaison, right? Yeah. They're like, hey, I'm introducing you to some of my cool friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then one of the cool friends, like, dogs you out. It's like, well, I don't trust you. I trust this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's been here.
Yeah, but that's the thing with Nick in particular, just because, you know, if it's Nick's show, you know, it's like people that are there all know who Nick is, and this other comic is just a new outsider, kind of. It's like, well, we don't know you, but we know this guy. So
they'll get beat up, dude.
Yeah.
I have been at those shows where I've watched. I went to a local show a few years ago, and the comic that was being brought up, as soon as he got up there, just dogged the person that booked him.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, what a dick.
Yeah, right.
And I just didn't. It just turned me off all the way because he was just being, like you said, there's one thing to be funny and playful, but it's a whole different thing to be disrespectful.
Yeah, you're
mad at that person or you're mad at that person. If we're homies, I'm only going to say something to you insulting enough to where people understand that we're still homies.
Yeah.
You know, that's my boy.
Well, so I think some people, it's also a muscle that not a lot of people, like you said, man, doing that comedy on the spot stuff gets you in tune a little more. Some people don't have that muscle, and then they come in and they're like, they just swing too big.
Mm-hmm.
And but in the moment, I mean, I could see that. But I've had a few where they've been on the show where it's like, oh, you ain't coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're done, dude.
Like, I've seen people try to do crowd work, and their idea of crowd work is saying something personally insulting to somebody. And it's like, why would... So the rule of crowd work that I found out is you would never insult someone personally. Like, if someone has a big nose or if someone's overweight, you're not like, look at the schnoz on you. Yeah. Because that's personal.
Right.
But if you do stereotypes, that goes way, way better because it's a stereotype.
People with big noses got big joints. You know what I'm saying? Good for you.
Yeah.
Make it come out looking good.
Yeah.
That's why your lady's smiling like that.
But and there's been times where I've seen, you know, people on the local scene personally insult someone thinking they're doing crowd work. And I'm like, you can't just get up there and just immediately just start talking crap to people who are sitting there and you're talking about their nose or their weight or they're ugly. Why would you say that?
Yeah, look at Rickles, though. I mean, he would earn your trust, get you comfortable, and then he could say whatever he wanted to you.
Okay, number one, that was Don Rickles. Number two, like you said, earn your trust.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But you cannot just come out insulting people who you've not earned their trust. And also, there's also a level of... If you read about like how to do comedy, like there's called a level of safety.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you look like a pedo, for instance, you should not be doing those types of jokes.
No, man.
Because then people immediately think, oh,
too close.
He's not kidding. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you're a little bit too in character.
That differs from person to person then, too.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it's even within your own, like... I can't even do the things that you do because that's different for who I am.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have to, the audience has to know that there's no way that you would do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's funny.
It's like you have to go the opposite of whatever it is or, you know, the truth, you know, lie even more.
That's why when I say I hit my kids, they don't believe me.
Exactly. Exactly.
But how do you think they mind?
Like, there's a level of safety because everyone, by the time you get to that... Okay, let me give you an example. I have an obese friend who's a comedian, and he does a joke, and about 30, 40 minutes into a set where he talks about he couldn't sexually assault women because he'd have to be like, hey, you're going to have to get on top.
Oh, my God.
That's good.
Oh, my God.
But the thing is that by the time he does that joke, the audience trusts him, they like him, and they know there's no way he would ever do that. So it removes the threat level of him doing that joke. And I've watched him do it multiple times, and the women in the crowd are the ones laughing the hardest.
Yeah.
because they trust him. Mm-hmm. Whereas if he came out the first thing and did that joke, they'd be like, hey, I don't know.
I'm not going to climb this mountain.
Yeah.
That's so. I've seen that a lot with like dark comics. I love dark humor personally, but I've seen in a lot of my favorite ones. I mean, I'll say, shout out John Wallen, because I think he's one of the greatest. Oh, but he is very dark humor.
He is our dark king.
But I've seen him do
write a joke.
I've seen him do poorly too, because it's like I feel like maybe he needs to, like you said, earn the trust more before he goes into some of the dark stuff. And then, but it also just depends on the crowd. I mean, I think that comes with the territory. I'm sure he knows that, where it's like, you know, some of the crowds just aren't going to get his style, you know, and then that's just the game. But I personally love that humor, and he's one of my favorites for sure.
Anytime I've gone to a show where I knew none of the comedians, where I'm just attending a show, mm-hmm. When you come on stage, you still have to earn my trust. Yeah, just because I do what you do doesn't mean you don't have to earn some trust out here. Because you know what I'm saying? If you come out and say something shaky at the very beginning of your set, I'm tuned out.
Yeah,
I'm
for
going
sure.
to the restroom. You
know, I think that's a big.
Well, someone had taught me.
Let me wash my hands.
I have to actually tell you guys, a headliner taught me some of the best advice I ever got. He told me that you have to treat the audience like a date.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of your set, you do the nice, fluffy, get to know you stuff. He goes, Julie, you wouldn't just walk out. He goes, if you were on a date, you wouldn't just say the most outrageous thing, would you? And I said, no. He goes, think about it. When you're on a date, how do you act? And he goes, you do the pleasantries, the get to know you. You get to know each other before you start getting into some of this other stuff.
Into more of the heavier topics or whatever it is. Yeah.
And he goes, because this is early on. I was like 2 or 3 years in. And he goes, your stuff is great, but it's in the wrong order.
Right.
He goes, you're doing the heavy stuff at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, and that's why the audience is like, what?
Yeah.
And he said, if you would just flip that, he goes, I promise you, it's going to go so much better. He goes, tomorrow, that's what I want to see. I was at the Looney Bin in Wichita. And I took his advice. It was like a completely different.
That's crazy to hear that.
Yeah.
After 8.
Okay.
Maybe I write a little, like a whole lot softer at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then,
that's good.
Because I've noticed in my shows where I've closed the shows, done 30 to 40 minute sets, I feel like it gets a little bit cold towards the end because I was hitting so hard at the beginning, trying to like really make sure I'm on there. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, it's like, okay.
A good like way to,
the energy feels, they're still laughing, but the energy feels dead.
You gotta have to build up, but too, I think that's probably just more of a good general rule, is just like, you know, save your best jokes to the end. I mean, really.
Well, it goes back to the threat level that I'd read about. Like if I was on a date with a guy and he first thing came out was talking about his, you know, stuff, I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Where if at the end of the date, if we have that rapport,
I'm
more likely gonna laugh and not feel threatened.
Right.
The same thing on stage.
Yeah.
Exact same concept on stage. Yeah. So especially if you're doing a longer set, because a short set you can kind of on and off. 45 minutes is a long time with an audience who doesn't like you.
Yeah,
that's a long time.
You have to have these things figured out by the time you get to that point.
Yeah.
Well, I one thing I used to do, or I heard on in a podcast or whatever, it was like, where are you funny? You know, that was one of the things that asked, like, where are you funny? And one of the places I'm funny is I'm really good at initial, like with customers and stuff. Like I'm coming into your home. Right. So I got to be trustworthy immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like the first thing I do, and then you guys see me doing on stage, the hey guys, you know, where it's like, I just, hey guys, you know, you just kind of brighten up. Well, you do that at somebody's house. You go, hey, how's it going? I'm Nick Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And they immediately smile. You make it real big. Hey, real open. And then they're like, yeah, come on in. Versus I've been where you're tired and you're just like, I'm just here to do a job. Hey, what's up? They're like, yeah, come on in. And then the initial reaction, you know, that's the difference between making money and not making money, right?
Right.
And so so usually my first jokes are, you know, hey, I just had a full pot of coffee, because they usually offer you something to drink. It's like, oh no, I had a full pot of coffee before I got here. I figured I need it, you know, something small, just a little cute, you know. Then you start pointing things out in their house, and then you find like something you start to build that rapport. 30 minutes in, I can talk to them about anything.
Yeah.
That comfortability, you know, of you know what they have when they're in the house in the foyer. You can see everything that they like because that's how people build their homes, you know. And you're like, oh, you like video games or you like your kids or, you know, you have a weird flag, you know. Hey, man, money spends the same. But you see what I'm saying? Then you realize, like, okay, I'm in the foyer. I know what we can start talking about. Mm-hmm. And then you start going through the rooms and you're like, okay, I can see who this person is. Within an hour.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think it's the same that I take that, I try to take that same approach. I'm going to start off, we're going to have fun. I mean, Comedy on the Spot's different because it raises as you go along in the show.
Mm.
So the barometer of like, okay, this is, I can't start this dirty. Well, at the end of the show, whenever we did that one, what did I do? The first thing I did was make fun of Caleb, and which is Caleb's another dark guy that plays against who he is.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Well, you know he's not the, because he's Mr. Muscles.
Yeah. Caleb McCurry.
That's Liz's favorite. That is Liz's.
I call him Mr. Muscles.
Yeah.
Don't you ever notice when he's doing the jokes about following the girl in the alley, the audience laughs?
Yeah.
Because they know he's not a threat. Because
he's, he's built their trust.
He really understands himself when he writes jokes about himself.
Well, that's the thing too, is he does that thing where she's like, can we talk? I mean, he follows her and then she turns around, which is crazy to confront him.
Yeah, right.
Hey, could you stop walking so close to me?
And that's kind of like making in this, within the story, he's conveying that he's not a threat even to the person that he's could be threatening.
Well, I can look at him and say he's not a threat. Yeah. I mean, if Caleb, no shade to Caleb, but if he was following me, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, he's not, you know, I'm taller than him, so I wouldn't
there
feel
better
like,
be a few of them. Not
saying he's not strong or anything, but he's.
I have to tell you though, every time I went to Brahms yesterday, and every time I go to Brahms, I hear you can have one scoop, two scoop, three scoops. Because that's the only thing I usually get there is ice cream. I just, that little jokey ass just plays in my head. It's so funny.
That's the same thing with Kilo and Flats. Chicken flats, the wings. Because he,
I don't think
bit.
I've heard that one.
Oh my god!
He compares eating chicken wings to how you go down on your woman.
Yeah. So if you're eating the flat, you know, when
you're not
you
clearing
off
the bone,
one bite. Pay that check, baby. That's one of the first jokes I heard when I first started going and watching was him, that's one of my favorite things too, is watching to get better. One of the best things that Liz and I have done is we'll go watch the shows at Bricktown, and we'll watch the TikTok people, we'll watch different demographics that we're not used to, and then you'll see like, okay, like this, this would be good. So what, in y'all's experience, what criteria, or when you see someone, what makes you feel like this person's a headliner?
Initial control. You know what I mean? If they're able to, because a lot of, like, I've opened up or hosted for headliners that weren't like nationally known, you know what I'm saying? But they still packed a good house and they still held the house in control the whole time. Mm-hmm. So, but if you come in and people start treating you like they don't really know you, then I'm like, how's that person closing a show? You know what I'm saying? But it's really about control.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they can are in control the entire time, and
maybe you have that kind of confidence and not
they're
not like nervous or shaky up there,
because everybody's gonna tell a shaky joke, a joke that might not go, but the ones that bury themselves after a bad joke are the ones that I don't trust. But you know, someone
if
that
they can bring it back,
if somebody just rolls past it and is still getting the constant you know what I'm saying, the constant levels of laughter, and then
So is that like part of that? I mean, that's really just the comedian getting in your feels, you know, and people recognizing it. Really, if you just, and it's like a conversation, like we've said before, you get weird in a conversation. As soon as you get past it, other people want to get past it too.
Yeah,
you don't have to hang out there at all. You don't have to make a face, you know. You just be like, hey.
I mean, you can acknowledge it, because sometimes acknowledging it makes it funny, and then you move on.
Yeah.
Don't try to go back.
But that's a way to move past it, is by calling it out.
And that's kind of a feel thing too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's more of like, all right, we don't need to talk about this. But Comedy on the Spot feels like that too, because you, I'm almost like trying to jump from piece to piece.
And yeah.
I've never been more. That's why this is like my favorite thing to do, because you're so tuned in mm-hmm. that you really can't even. I don't even know if I'm doing bad.
Really, you don't know how bad you're doing until you get the video.
I will say,
okay, they were not laughing.
Last night or two nights ago, or whatever, I think that was like your set was that was one of your, my favorite. I don't know. I was laughing so hard at your set for whatever reason. I can't remember what it was, but it was just so good.
Well, it was that Parker thing. Yeah. That guy, I'm telling you, this guy, you guys be sure to watch it. On the Spot's coming out fourth Friday next month. But no, Parker good. And then his friend, best friend, and his best friend's girlfriend. And the girlfriend was like, because one of the things that came up was like texting.
Oh, sex, nudes or something. No, I got the nudes. Sexting, I think. Yeah, it was just sexting.
But she was like, yeah, this dude right here. And then we're like, why do you know his texting habits? Yeah. And then the rest of the night. That was one of those motifs, one of those things that people latched on. It kept coming back, you know. But. And there was one guy up front who wasn't laughing. And then whenever I strode up right at the beginning, I was like, "You good?" He's like, "You good, man?"
You know why that works, later. Right? Because the audience is in on the joke.
Yeah.
They help create it.
They help create it. Yeah. That's why they think it's funny. They feel like they were part of it.
Yeah. Which that was good.
Yeah.
That crowd in particular was like a big family too. Mm-hmm. So it's like they all knew each other. So
shout out Mike All. Thank you. Thank you for bringing everybody.
He was really great. That's always a good one. But
what was the question you just asked him?
Oh, you were talking about the how do you see? How can you tell if someone's a good headliner?
I will tell you. I will test. I test because I get asked for recommendations a lot, and so I don't want to ever put a venue or a comic in a bad position that they're not ready for, because I don't think that's fair.
Right?
Because if you screw up one time, comics typically remember it, and you don't get another chance. So I try to be very careful with who I recommend, because I want to always set people up for the best possible outcome. I want the venue to be happy. I want the comic that asked me to trust me. And so sometimes I'll ask people, like, you going to switch your setup tonight? And if they say no, I know, you are not ready. You are not ready.
Because so you're kind of looking for that fluidity kind of.
Exactly.
If someone's willing to let it all go and just do,
Like, I remember one time there was a comic that I knew had a very questionable joke about women. And I went out into the showroom. I saw it was like 98% women. I said, "Hey, did you see what the crowd looked like?" Yeah. And he goes, "Yeah, it's full." And I said, "No, did you see what the crowd looked like?" And he goes, "No, it's full." And I said, "It's almost all women." And I said, "You thinking about taking that joke out?" And he goes, "No."
Okay.
I was like, "Oh, okay.
I'm going to be out there for that."
And I was like, "Oh,
I'm going to get front row.
I know.
Watch this shit happen."
And
how'd it go?
As bad as you would expect, the point where actually my own daughter was in the crowd, and her friends almost walked out because they were so mad.
Yeah.
And he could not get anything going the rest of the show. And so I will always ask and see if they're paying attention. Like, I'll say, "Hey, what's the crowd look like?" And if they are talking about numbers more than who is out in the crowd, or if I say, "You gonna change up your set?" Like, and they're like, "Absolutely not." I'm like, "Probably not." When that recommendation comes up again, probably not gonna go with this person.
Yeah.
Because you have to be able to move with your audience, and
gotta kind of know your audience. It is good to walk through the venue a little bit and kind of just look and see who's sitting there.
You know what we used to do at Looney Bin, remember those stupid videos they would have before? Like America's Funniest Videos?
Who's laughing at those videos?
If they were laughing at the stupid shit, you're like, "This is a..." They're not going to be the smartest crowd.
Right. If they're laughing at a baby kicking their grandpa in the balls.
Yeah.
My Husky Boy joke's going to kill it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. That's a kind of an interesting way to... I don't know. I think I went to Looney Bin like once before they closed. Yeah. So I mean, didn't know they ever did that, but that's kind of an interesting way to gauge their sense of humor.
Like same thing at Bricktown, because I always go out when they're playing the announcements, And if they're dead silent when they're showing the comics coming up, I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, God. These people are trying to get drinks and chicken wings and pretzels, man. They're not listening to this. The only time that I didn't care about who was in the crowd was when I was doing a hot box show at Bricktown where they had a smoke at halftime.
Or what? Did they really?
That's because you were high.
Because I knew everybody in the crowd was gonna be a pothead. So we just knew the flow of the show. Yeah. And it was one of the most beautiful shows I ever did.
Weed brings out everybody back down to baseline.
Yeah. Everybody was chilling, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just laughing good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we did one of those shows at a good friend of ours, B&K Buds. They move now and they're different. But I wish I remembered what the name was. But my good friend of ours, Crystal Osborne, she introduced me to Veronica. And so we did a little show, and it was a weed show, right? Mm-hmm. So the goal was to do your set, mm-hmm. and then you went out and smoked, and then we did the rotation again, and we did our set high. I just got high the whole time.
You're high for both.
I did it the right way. I went in pretty sober. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then I smoked. After my first set, pretty heavily.
Yeah. But I mean, earlier that day, usually around 3, you know, and then get some chill and then go do a show. Mm-hmm. But because everybody was smoking in there too. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sure this isn't legal, but everyone was smoking in there too. But I did my set and I remember just being like, this is fun. Like, everybody was just laid back. It felt more like a jet. You remember Makers, the cigar bar?
Oh, yeah.
Downtown. Mm-hmm. It had that kind of feel to it, where it was, like, smoky. People just, like, kicking it. Doing comedy through a haze is the best.
And it's like it's almost like you're back in high school, really just standing in a circle telling jokes to your homies.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know. I did a show for a cannabis club in Tulsa for their Christmas party, like, probably 5-6 years ago. And they let them smoke during the show, so it sounded like a whooping cough.
Everybody's coughing instead of laughing.
You gotta see if it's joints or blunts. If it's blunts out there, it's gonna be some coughing.
Yeah, it was blunts because you try to do a punchline, you hear, you know, and they miss the punchline.
Like a cacophony of coughs? Yeah. We're doing that right now?
I'm like, I'm just gonna get my check and go.
But dude, my check and my goodie bag. If you're not giving out goodie bags at a pot show, what are you doing?
That's free advertisement.
It really is.
On everything.
Yeah.
But we did that. We stepped out, got high, and then they had the microdose where it was like the micro edibles, which just kick in within like 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to take two of these. And then I went out, smoked another joint, hit a little dab, and then I went back up. And I remember the whole room after I started, it just shifted. I remember, and everybody was like, back. Yep. And then everybody on the set slowed down and almost just like, I don't even remember. I just remember it just kind of felt like it was like, hey, what's up? We're talking.
Yeah.
It almost gets completely quiet, but you can still feel, you know what I'm saying? They're still with you.
Yeah. They're like,
yeah.
They don't laugh loud, but they laugh good.
That's different than the alcohol shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
drunk. I've realized that every comedian gets louder.
Yeah.
So they're telling their first set pretty sober, and then the second time they come on when they're a little liquored up, they're just louder. But they're still telling good jokes. Like, you just got louder.
but.
So if you're doing a headlining show versus just closing out a show, right? Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Well, headliner show, let me tell you this, and I found this out the hard way with Looney Bin, because Mason actually did me a favor and was like, I was like, can I have comps? And he goes, no, you're going to learn how to sell tickets. I had no comps. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you have to sell so many tickets. Otherwise, if you don't have this many sold by this date, I'm going to pull your show. How embarrassing would that be?
Yeah. So it kind of motivates you to.
But it gives you a good line.
It gave me a good line.
Yeah.
It taught me that if you're. So that's a great question, because closing a show is different. But if you're the headliner,
you're the one that's
selling tickets, not the club, not anyone else. Mm-hmm. So I started to go, okay, well, just posting a show on my Instagram or Facebook is not going to cut it,
right?
Because I'm just advertising to comics.
Yeah.
So it really, really made me learn that number one, the thing I learned the most is I've done a terrible job of building an audience, which I have. We talked a little bit about that before the podcast started. Yeah. I've done a terrible job of selling myself. I've done a terrible job of building an audience. I've done a terrible job of getting outside my little bubble. Mm-hmm. Totally my fault, but I've been more focused on writing and performing. Mm-hmm. So that taught me number one. So I was like, okay, I don't have an audience. Totally my fault. I'm going to have to figure out how to sell tickets.
Well, we are peeling the orange all the way to the middle today.
So I went on, I did the morning show, which helped a little bit. I got in all the Tulsa thing to do groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had friends in the Tulsa area that mm-hmm. I've grown up with, spread the word, help me out. I appealed to people personally, which is not exactly building an audience to get your friends and coworkers in. But I was
but still, you have to kind of go to your, you know, where you can, your kind of closest people to help. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, having jumping off points is all you have.
You know, that's all anybody has is like who your network is that can.
But I mean, the first time, it was strictly pretty much just, and then the second time, I was like, okay, I can't keep doing the same thing. And so two things really helped. Because I did the same things, and it wasn't any one thing that did it for me. It was several small things that added up. And there was a joke. Remember the Coldplay concert? The lady that got caught cheating. Okay, so the day after that happened, I imposed my face over her face. And I put something like, miss the affair of the century. Yeah. Julie Drake will be at the Looney Bin.
Beautiful.
And it got almost 40,000 views. It went like semi-viral.
Yeah, yeah, that's and a lot. So, a lot of people see that and they see your name and the Looney Bin and the date. I mean, that's...
So I reached, because I created an, I don't know, like a ad for it, but the ad budget was tiny and it just went viral, like semi-viral on its own. So that helped.
Yeah.
And then there's a TikTok trend that we hopped into and we created a reel based on that TikTok trend and we put it on the Looney Bin page and then my page. And that got a lot of good traction because it was something in the moment where it was catching people's attention more than just slapping a poster where people have no idea or people don't see that you're funny or people have no idea. So I learned the second time to get in when these things are happening, these pop culture moments are happening and turn it in somehow to advertising yourself.
Use it somehow.
Well, we'll start the show at 6-7 I was at a basketball game. I was at the basketball game the other day, and every time a kid got on the Jumbotron, they did that. And I want, I didn't want to slap a kid. I think stop.
I think the kids, I think what it is, it's a way to go, if you hate it, that you're old.
Yeah.
And if you like it, you're a youngster.
Right. Yeah, man, that's fine. That's fine. I'll be that person. Yeah. I'll be that person that I made fun of when I was younger. Yeah. Like, do y'all know what this is?
You don't know what cool is?
I know what 6'9" is.
That's how some of y'all got here.
Hello.
I don't think that's how it works, Nick, but
if you're doing it right. That's just the first step. This episode of Rhythm and Wit was brought to you by Campbell & Son Electric, Oklahoma City's trusted one-truck electrical contractor with over 20 years of experience in the field. Whether it's upgrading your home's electrical service, troubleshooting issues, or tackling small commercial projects, Campbell & Son Electric delivers top-notch work with care and attention you'd expect from a family business. Servicing areas like Dell City, Edmond, Yukon, Mustang, and beyond, they're your go-to for reliable expert service. Need help with your next project? Visit CampbellAndSonElectric.com today and get it done right the first time. Campbell & Son Electric, brightening Oklahoma, one wire at a time. So you said he had a basically a water line, you said Mason did, of like how many tickets you could sell.
Could sell. I had to sell by a certain date because he has to staff it.
Right.
And with no comps, like I couldn't even give a discount, which is a good thing because it taught me how to sell tickets and not go, okay, well, everyone can get comps.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And also working the Looney Bin, they used to have every Thursday, the headliner, just the headliner would go do TV and radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how come we're not? And they're like, because the headliner is the one that is selling the show. Not They're not here for the feature. They're not here for the host.
Definitely not.
So I learned that the headliner is the one that really drives the bus there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many tickets was the water line?
20.
20. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
That's not bad, but when you have a show
still pressure.
And back to school and on the last day of Blue Whale.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Come on.
That's
He gave me a challenge, and I was like, well, I'm not going to cry about it. I'm going to be grateful that he gave me the opportunity to headline his club again, and I'm going, it's going to be a challenging day, and we sold like almost 70.
I think I honestly think he put you in the best position to succeed when you look at it.
He did. I mean, because it taught me.
You got to do this.
It taught me I got to get an audience.
It kind of showed what you're missing, too.
Exactly, and what I need to work on. Mm-hmm. And at first, I was a little bit salty because I would keep getting these texts these emails that would pop up, call now and get free tickets to so-and-so. And I'm like, hey, everyone knows who that is. No one knows who I am. What are you doing? Right.
Free tickets.
What?
Tickets.
He gave you an ad budget?
No. I'm saying that I would get their emails about their weekly shows. Yeah. If you call now, we're giving away 15 free tickets to, I don't know, some famous headliner. Right. I'm like, no, wait a minute.
Well, I mean, but did you have to do all the ads? Did he do some of the ads? Did he give him ideas? Because like you said, the flyers thing, people have trained themselves to not even see
just ignore
it. That's where I'm at now. So I'm just doing videos and like keeping them in the... What I did for the Bringer show in Tulsa, because I don't know anybody in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. But I bought 10 tickets. I was like, I'm going to buy these 10 tickets and then I'm going to give away two. And I just started calling businesses. And I was like, hey, can you put this flyer in your break room and use this promo code? And I'll give you guys two free tickets to this place.
Beautiful.
You know?
Beautiful. There's a method to it.
And one, nobody came. Right?
Didn't work.
Well, you tried.
But I ended up giving those free. Yeah, I did. I mean, I try to do the same shit that I do here, but I don't know. When nobody knows you, it's a lot tougher. You know?
Well, it's hard with a flyer because they cannot see you and they don't know. But also, I see comics do it all the time. If you are on Facebook or Instagram, unless you have a huge following and you're putting the flyer up, or you're putting it, I see this all the time, and I'm not dissing anyone, and I don't want it to be taken like that, but if I pull up and, you know, your flyer is in a comics-only group, comics are not your audience.
Yeah.
They're not. And so why aren't you putting it in an event page? Or
Making sure you're inviting people. Yeah. We're all bad about that, and I've been bad about that since after COVID. Mm-hmm. Before COVID, I would make videos. I would make sure you saw my flyer, but also social media wasn't as intricate as it is now.
You're fighting for so much attention.
So
it's like everybody's doing.
Most of my followers would see it back then, but now I post it and people are like, "I didn't see it."
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been used to competing with like Mr. Sparky, you know, all this.
They have a big budget for ads.
That's all they do. That's a majority of their hourly rate. That's the majority of their hourly rate goes towards their ability to get at you at any time, and then also their I've known this because I got a buddy who used to work there, and he stole all their information. But
gave it to you. Nice.
Yeah, dude. Well, their sales tactics, everything is geared towards making the big money.
Right.
All right. So if they have like a level, and I think this is kind of how you have to have a level of who's going to come to the show. Right. Yeah. It's the same thing for electrical, which is like a level of amount of danger this person is in and how much money I can make. Right. And so what they do is they go 1 through 5. If you're a 5, you've got like a plug that's not working. It's not killing you. Mm-hmm, you know, one is we need this panel changed out or this house is going to burn down. Right. And so that's like the difference between $10,000 and $100 drive, you know, fee. So they do that. And then whoever's on the list gets priority based on the number. Mm-hmm. Right. Unless they're willing to pay after hours charges, which that 5 becomes a 1 after that. Right. Mm-hmm. So the people are the same way, which is like, okay, who do I know? Where is I'm most effective at putting this information? And a lot of it's trial and error. It's like, okay, the group's pages, like you say, they don't work. But you know what they do work for? People who are from out of town who are looking for somebody to host something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they go, who does the most work here?
Yeah.
Right. And so that's how I got with Bo Johnson and that one show for Looney Bin.
Greg
Williams. Yeah. It was, doing and seeing how that actually affected me. I still put them on the group's pages just because I can see, like, okay, this is where people go to see what comedy is happening here. Mm-hmm. But the most effective is Steel Yard. Remember we did that show at Steel Yard?
Then
I get contact. I got contact with her, and then I talked to her about giving her free promo codes or free tickets if they would help share stuff. And so they share our stuff for two free tickets.
And that's awesome. The apartments, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, down the street.
I've delivered DoorDash there. that's the only reason I know about it. But there's a lot of people live there. Yeah. I mean, that's a good kind of interesting. I never thought about that, but it's like go to apartment complexes and see if they have like a bulletin board or something, you know, for a community bulletin board. I'm always like in like Panera Breads and stuff, like a DoorDash. But like they have like I'm sure in most Panera Breads there's like a little bulletin board by the bathrooms, you know what I mean? Like those are, I think people forget about those kind of more traditional avenues,
putting stuff out to where people can see it. When I did Comedic Confessions with Cody Troutman, he gave us all flyers, and I went and put one up at a Hearst Donuts, because they know me at Hearst Donuts, because I'm up in there five, six times a week. You know what I'm saying? So I did one there, and then I did one at the Floor Bodega because Angela's good people over there. So, you know, but she's got 1,000 things going on in her window at Floor Bodega. But still, you just never know. Because when I'm walking my dogs by different places, I'm always looking in the window to see what's going on. I don't go to any.
Yeah, but you know about it.
I know.
You could.
Like, oh, they're
but
playing.
If you saw it there, and you see it online, and you see it in your inbox, and you see it, you know,
kind of
radio.
Because that's what I always thought, and we've talked about this for years, but it's like doing that, it kind of creates this, like, importance. It's like, oh, this must be important, you know, or something, because it's so many places. So,
Oklahoma Film Exchange is doing great with their movie things, because they're just putting those movie flyers up everywhere, and I kind of want to go up there just to
see.
They
do so much stuff, and it's like I always like, man, I've only been there like twice for different things. It's like I wish I had more time. I'd go there all the time because they do a lot of stuff there. But
I will say, one thing I have learned about Facebook ads in particular is they are useless until the week of the show.
Yep.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Yep. Okay. Don't even waste your money.
But that's trial and error too. Like I said, you got good jumping off points, like you're saying. Go to places that recognize you, right? You go to Hearst Donuts. I'll go to Locke and just be like, hey man, you guys know how I've been talking about being a comedian for 3 years, and you were like, this guy's gay.
Yeah, there's one contractor's coming in again.
Well, one of my contractor friends was up there, and we were just talking, shooting the shit, old tally, and he was like, man, your show last night was nuts, dude. That was crazy. Is that off the cuff? Da da da. You know, and like, yeah, man. And then one of the guys was like, "You're that comedian guy, right?" He was like, "You put on that show." He's like, "Yeah, this guy was great." Mm-hmm. And then I was like, "Let me throw some flyers down here."
That's the thing. You got to get other people to talk about you.
Yeah,
that's kind of.
And then treat it like it's not a big deal.
I think that's why one of the reasons I feel like this podcast is valuable is because like we talk to people, and it's like we're inviting you guys on here. It's like, so it's like someone else is putting attention on you, so it's hopefully people see that and be like, oh, they must be good because somebody else is giving them airtime or whatever.
Well, I will say the Moms Unhinged has so many repeat audience members, and the shows get bigger because the people that come to the initial shows talk about how great it is, and then they bring their friends, and then their friends are like, hey, you got to come. This show's amazing. And then they bring their friends, and that's how that's able to sustain it.
That's awesome, because dudes can't replicate that show. You can't do that. Dad's on his. I'm like,
you could.
You talking about a Republican convention?
So one of those, what do you call those beta camps that dudes are going to? Where
what is it?
What?
There's like camps that grown men go to I don't know what it is. It's a lot of screaming and a lot of grown men crying and pushing each other and hugging each other, and I'm not into it.
Boy Scouts? Men crying. Men crying, that gets me hot.
I think they're called beta camps.
Let me go. I want to make them cry.
Alpha something. I don't know, but I feel like everything that's happening in those videos is making that man even more toxic. He's about to go and be a douche to his wife.
Dude, just teach him how to hunt and fish. You know, don't make.
We're laughing at these dudes. I hope this goes. I hope this finds somebody. That's a fit. I went to a beta camp.
Yeah, Joel, yeah. I hope this finds you well.
Found a new porn category. Men crying. Thanks, Will.
You're welcome. That was a thing. Damn, I forgot where we were. What was I trying to ask? So we were talking about ads.
Well, we know Nick's going to go to the beta camp now. So.
Yeah. Hey, man. They're going to need somebody to lead them.
Your wife's going to hate you.
She'd be like, can we go? But yeah, we talked about the ads, what you do to kind of push that out. Mm-hmm. Where else do we want to go with that?
What else you got on here?
Oh, see, yeah, that's right.
You make these notes and reps you don't look at them.
Let's see, chunks, material. So you go through your material. I do the cards too. I usually just listen to music. Or, I mean, not music. Listen to my sets while I'm working. Mm-hmm. That kind of helps too. Because I like to have it just in my back pocket.
No, man.
Because to refresh, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like you said, when I go up, I just try to, unless it's at Bricktown hosting, I have like a hosting set and like how I am
kind of certain
versus when I do a set.
Well, yeah. That's smart because, I mean, mm-hmm. actually, I was featuring on the very first time he hosted a show at Bricktown, mm-hmm. and everyone asked me, and I said, he did great. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, you can ask, I mean, everyone asked how you did, and I said, he did great, and he didn't deviate. Mm-hmm. He didn't try to do anything crazy. He did what he knew was going to work.
Right.
Yeah.
As, you know what I mean? So it was really smart that he didn't get up there and try to do anything crazy.
Because that's not an open mic. You're not trying stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And a lot of, I mean, what I've come to realize is that if you're hosting, that audience ain't there for you.
They're not. Mm-hmm. Right. You're there to take a bullet.
Get them warmed up while they're getting their food and then let the people on the show.
Well, I just did that Thanksgiving bash. Mm-hmm. And Mike Goodwin said I did good. And that was enough for me that night. Yeah. I was like, Liz, you drive. I'm going to sit over here. I'm going to be just with myself. But no, he and I was like really proud of myself for that. And but one of the things that I heard from Joe, and because he mentioned, he's like, hey, man, that was a really good set. Mm-hmm. It's like they were laughing, mm-hmm. you know. But while I was watching them, man, they're eating. They're looking over, you know. And so I was like, I'm just throwing fastballs mm-hmm. and seeing who listens. And then whoever I connect with, that's whenever I start.
Yeah, it's kind of like every single open mic. There's going to be pockets of people that are really invested and then like pockets of people that are just there.
Mm-hmm. But I did. Yeah. I was watching him and he didn't like I've seen hosts get up there and they realize no one's listening mm-hmm. and their energy starts to change and they either get angry mm-hmm. or they start to lose their confidence or they start to. And Nick just was like steady the whole time. And then by the end of his set, I would say the last five-ish minutes, the last part of your set, they were engaged and listening because they finally had gotten everything taken care of. And they were laughing.
Mm.
But, I mean, the first part of your set as a host is, I mean, not going to be hard.
You're giving drink specials and letting them know who coming this weekend.
Yeah. He never lost his confidence.
Yeah.
That's because he's adopted. And I'm a middle child. So you don't give me some attention.
Will you ever fuck up a $10,000 machine and have to go to your boss and be like, hey, look, something crazy just happened. I'm missing an eyebrow. That's fine.
Because I have seen hosts just lose their minds.
I think you kind of have to know. I think hosting is such its own thing. I mean, obviously, Nick, you've hosted more shows than most comics have, you know, that are put in that position, like at Bricktown, that haven't hosted as many as Nick has.
Mm. Well, but the thing with Port of Cork in it, though, there's not the traffic like there is at a club. Mm-hmm. There's not people coming in and out. Mm-hmm. There's not people taking orders. There's none of that distractions. Right. It is a captive audience. Mm-hmm. So I was very interested to see how you would do where you have a captive audience that doesn't have servers taking their order, that's not still seating people. And it was a really good show for all of us. We all had a really good show.
That's what's important, that everybody has a good show.
Well, and clean. I think that being clean up top as a host, you got to give somebody a place to go next. You know?
I had to be clean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was a clean show.
I had to be clean, and I have to tell you, like, well, first of all, what was funny is because people were going up to Liz telling them how great she did on stage. Oh, yeah.
Because she looked like
we had this like the same haircut, and I was like, "Wait a minute!"
She was like, "I think I need to go hide a little bit." So she did.
Racism around the. Well, man, y'all don't all look alike.
She's like, "Well, as many people have told me, I did good on stage tonight," and I was like, "Wait a minute!"
She needs to go and pass that on to you. It's like, "Oh, they said you did great.
I'm like, Liz, go wait in the car.
Like, I love that Liz Drake. What was her name?
Liz Drake.
Julie Campbell.
Well, she's up there at Bricktown.
Chilling. She had blue hair at one point, and then she had blonde hair. Same night.
Well, we both have the biracial son, so.
Yeah.
It's a lot in common there. Yeah. But no, she said that. She was like, I keep getting... That's people funny. Keep telling me, good job. Like, you're a great mom.
Yeah. It'd be dark in them clubs.
Yeah. But no, it was a great experience.
That's great.
That one, and then I did the Thanksgiving bash, mm-hmm. and I don't know if I was in a weird space or maybe it was just because of, but it went well. Mm-hmm. But I'm a firm believer in you fall to your practice, mm-hmm. right? So, and then like I said, I think a lot of that being just stoic through the whatever happens, mm-hmm. I started working on that when, I think it was JJ, because I was having a hard time. I didn't want to show it. And you know how that is when you're like, all right, who cares? Blood in the water, they're not going to mm-hmm. listen, you know? And so he was like, man, bombing gracefully, mm-hmm. you know, putting yourself in a position where he's like, hey, I'm just talking. If you don't like it, we'll move to the next thing.
Yeah.
Or like you said, you can kind of play with, oh, well, I guess you guys don't like that, you know?
I watched Tony Woods, dude. Tony Woods is one of my favorite comedians. And I watched him just bomb. It was the most beautiful bomb he had ever seen. You know what I'm saying? Because he's just... Okay, that's fine. You know what I mean? You could just see it on his face, like, okay, they ain't messing with me, but I'm still going to have a good time. I'm still going to tell my jokes.
Yeah, I'm going to have a good time. Yeah. Right. I think that's what it can turn into. And then it's not your fault if they're not playing.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
Mm-hmm. When I hosted for Chad Daniels with the Friday Late Show, which we all know is just, it's a nightmare fuel. Mm-hmm.
Night, drunken.
It was going as well as you expect a late night show to go. Yeah. And so finally I said, this is just like home. I'm talking and just like my kids. You guys are like my kids. You're not listening to me mm-hmm. either. And they got a huge laugh.
Yeah.
And then it got him dialed in. Mm-hmm. And Chad was in the back. He watched all the shows and he said, thank you for not losing your shit on these people. Because he said, you know, he goes, the way you stood there and you handled it, he goes, you righted the ship with that one joke.
Yeah.
And then you got him to tune in because he said he's had hosts that have yelled at the crowd. Like I was saying, you didn't lose your comment. He goes, they've yelled, they've screamed, they've gotten mad. He goes, once you lose control up there, you might as well just put your mic back in the stand and walk off.
I was doing a show during the same time that Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle were in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And
I went to that. That was...
You went to that show?
That show.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Not Will's show.
Awesome.
Was it good? Good for you.
Awesome. I'm glad you got to see two of the best comedians in the world when you could have seen three regular Oklahoma City comedians. But no, the... Woo, okay,
you missed your chance.
For free. Yeah.
We all know I'm not good at choosing men, so
it wasn't all male card.
Yeah, and I chose the black man, of course. But, so.
The right ones,
yes, the
but
right ones.
The,
finally.
And I'm sure they made you laugh. Too. But even the host was up there. The host was up there, and the crowd wasn't laughing at what they were doing, mm-hmm. and the host was like, I guess you guys probably rather be at the Paycom Center watching Chappelle and Rock. And I looked from the back of the room and I was just like, no. And then I found the host and I was like, don't say shit like that to the crowd, because you should be happy that they're in here,
right?
You know what I mean?
They chose
so mm-hmm. just because they weren't laughing at yo stuff don't mean they won't laugh at and this was up top. Like,
at the beginning.
When he opened the show, like, yo, you can't do that.
That's like when comics say, I'm not funny. Well, the audience is going to believe you.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to, that's not funny,
it's
or
like,
I'm
let
not
them
funny.
Decide that, not tell them or what they
want. That put, joke's stupid.
That joke's stupid. Don't put that stuff out there. Right. Yeah. Don't. It's like,
that's in you.
That's mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with them.
Yeah, you can't undersell and overdeliver in comedy. It doesn't work like that. If you're underselling yourself, you're gonna be that on stage, undersold.
I mean, it's like a sales job. If you don't think you're funny, why would the audience think you're funny?
Well, I think that too, like you said, it's a sales job. I think there's a lot of truth to that, right? Because a lot of people that are in sales end up finding their way, or good at sales, end up finding their way into comedy, because it's very... One of the things you said is when you walk out to the crowd and you look for who you're dealing with, I do that just because I'm... And again, this is what...
I worked in sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. So
I work in a restaurant.
So my reference is... Walking into people's homes, if I see an old person and it's a crowd full of old people, I know, all right, grandparents' jokes, anything that's cute. But also, you're not going to talk to them like you would talk to, you know, a bunch of people in cowboy hats and cowboy boots.
Yeah,
that's
be making six, seven jokes.
Yeah, or a bunch of stoners.
Oh, you might just for the fun of it. Hey, look, she's 6'7". You're not going to make it.
I saw somebody giving a fast food worker a hard time because he wouldn't call out that number. Because that was the kid's number. Oh. He was like, come on, man. Will you just say it out loud? And he's standing right next to me, dude. Will you take your burger and get out my face, please?
Six, and then six, the one that comes after six.
1 + 66? You got to start doing that now?
The order before 68. The order before 68.
Just give us healthcare. Then we ain't got to do this. Just give us healthcare, dude.
Elect some women, please. Elect some women.
That's just you at the Brahms, like whenever you're on that. But okay, so headlining, we're kind of seeing that, doing the ads, promoting yourself, selling yourself, being an actual human on stage, and being in the moment, in the room. What personally would you recommend for someone who's coming up 3 years in? I did a headline show last year, so calm down.
I also hosted for that.
Best host. All right.
Yeah.
That's why he's back. Also, the ultimate homie. I appreciate
that's
it.
Why I hate headlining.
But yeah, there's a few other people that be on that as well. Cepeda Cheeks is coming. He said he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And and Matt Farrell. It's the people have helped me a lot throughout the year. That's the idea. Yeah.
Adrian Dole just did that same thing and had me on it, and it was nice.
Yeah.
He wanted to do something big for himself,
mm-hmm.
and so to be called on by anybody really that has a belief in you is flattering.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Well, you're like the spiritual guide, I feel like, whenever you go in, and when you go to Bricktown, you don't know the waters you're about to step into for the next, if you stick with it. You think the battle is getting on stage and writing jokes, but it becomes very spiritual after a little while.
Yeah. The battle is with yourself.
Yeah.
Right. It really is. It's the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror. No disrespect.
But that's why you've helped me along. Like I said, in different places. Like when I first started, one of the things that I didn't do, I didn't like calling my son my stepson, because I was like, I raised that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? That's my son. And but he was like, but no, dude, your joke's going to be better. And then I was like, oh, you can lie. You can just lie.
You really
can. I mean,
it's
just
an embellishment on the things that all my jokes are written from the truest of places. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's how you get the best out of your jokes. And that's how you get the best reception. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because people can relate to things that are similar to what they've gone through.
Right. The audience isn't stupid.
They really know
when you're being authentic, and they know when you're full of it.
Yeah.
They know.
I was with this one girl last night.
Yeah.
No. No. Nah, I drove by your house. You was at home.
Thanks, Mom. Well, one of my favorite things is that I've been able to do with this is with my old man. He didn't get to see me for a long time just because I think he was a little like, Nick's doing this, you know?
Yeah.
But then he also saw me at that Bringer show, or the one where the owners were here for at the Bricktown Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. And that was his first time coming out to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, shit, you're good. But if he would have saw me before that, you know, it wouldn't have been as welcome. But he used to come to our shows back in the day.
Oh, for music, right? Yeah.
His garage was where we practiced three times a week at least. We would practice.
If you guys weren't at least good enough, he'd have been like, hey, get your friends in the shit.
He'd come in. Well, Mom kept us there. She was the reason why. Mm-hmm. But we would play, and he would come in, and he'd be like, where's the hog's leg at? Which is, you know what a hog's leg is? It's a joint, but it's bent. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like a hog's leg. So he would be like, where's the hog's leg at? He don't get on the internet. But, and then he would go, y'all need to get better, and then just leave.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Yeah,
come in,
that's what you want.
Smoke with us and then
get out. Then tell us how crappy we were and fucking leave.
That's definitely dad motivation right there. Well, I'm going to shut him up.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work.
Nope. We never got better.
Here's what I did. I just was like, you know how you're a foreman? I'm going to go ahead and be a contractor. Show you. And now he works for me. There you go. My question to you, headliner, what advice would you give a guy in my position? Was like the top advice that you would give.
What do you mean, your position?
About to headline, probably only 3 years in, if you could only impart some knowledge.
If somebody was going to headline a show for, you know, the first or second time.
Yeah.
I would just say everything we've already talked about.
Yeah,
I think I got it.
I say go into it not like this is the big one. Mm-hmm. Go into it like I got more to do after this.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that way it relieves a lot of the pressure.
So you were there last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How'd you feel about the show then?
I thought it was fantastic. It mm-hmm. probably ran a little bit longer than it should have because I could feel the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, they were checking down maybe 15 into yours. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's also still on the host too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that was a learning experience for me as a host. So this year, yeah, you can blame me if you want to. So you know, this time around, we're gonna make sure we keep the energy at a different level. So by the time I'm doing the final announcements, they're still, you know what I mean? They still got some energy.
Leave them wanting more.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you remember last year it was more of a comedy on the spot than it felt like an actual show.
Yeah, because you had Tam and them up in there, and Tam and them was asking a lot of questions. Dude had on a green Christmas suit. So they were ready to
party. I remember last year because you had all your material and you're probably nervous about like how I'm gonna tell all these jokes, and then you didn't even get to tell any of it because you're just riffing.
I remember you saying a few times, "Yeah, so I'm an electrical contractor." We're like, "Dude, we know that. Everybody knows that about you."
That's the thing, is like everybody that was there was your friends and family, so it's pretty easy to.
So load the room.
Load the room. Make sure everybody knows who you are.
And then just go into. I wish that I could have done most of my closing sets. Like I knew there was something coming, you know what I'm saying? Because I was doing them like they were the last ones, and that puts so much. Yeah. It's just unnecessary pressure.
Let's treat it like something that you continue to come back to, the pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, the pressure of this, but it's really just a step before the next.
Yeah, just keep going. You know what I mean? It's like the first game of the season. Mm-hmm. Like this ain't the championship.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We got a game tomorrow. So.
Yeah, we do actually. Bamboo Room will be December 13th, right after.
I don't know how I can say. Supposed to pump him up.
We got Big A coming with a few of his crew from Texas. That'll be fun. Let's see. Okay, well.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff.
I don't know what else is left, man. Thank you all so much.
You got no more questions? You got me up this early and got no more questions.
Okay, well, you got some questions for us? You got some questions that you want to be? How come I haven't been on here?
Man. I'm just.
What was that spiritual shit about?
I'm glad to be in the seat.
Yeah.
So I watch these videos whenever they pop up.
Nice. So thank y'all so much. This has been so beautiful to talk to you guys again. Thanks for coming back, and everybody check out Nick Campbell headlining at Put a Cork in It December 12th with some really great people.
You can get some Thunder Championship shirts from Will Davis. Just go ahead and hit him up
also
online.
My band.
Big Willie style.
Yeah, my band, Enrique and the Sun Chips, will be playing a special set. You know what I'm saying? We are on our Garden Salsa tour right now.
Okay.
That Garden Salsa flavor,
y'all
Sun Chips.
Do you have any shows coming up you want to shout out for the people?
Yeah, where they can find you.
Yeah, and social media.
My shows right now are kind of like all over. So anyways, but you can find me on TikTok at Julie Comedy and then the number one, or at Instagram at Julie Comedy. Mm-hmm. That'd be the easiest way.
Right. Yeah, keep up with everything you've got going on. You do a lot of shows. Will, you got anything?
December 12th, catch me at Put a Cork in It, hosting for the fantastic Nick Campbell as he does his headline set. I don't have anything really booked. It's humbling, but it's also motivating. You know what I'm saying?
It's the end of the year.
Nobody's coming out.
And you're on social media.
I'm Willie Funny.
On Instagram.
On Instagram.
I always love that name.
me and my friend Evo, shout out to Evo, came up with it drunk one night at Good Times. She was like, "No, you should do this."
It's good. I don't like it.
All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks everyone for watching.
Yeah. We'll come out to the show. That's all I need.
All right. That's it.
Thanks. Bye.
Great.
Great job. Great job. Thank you so much. Thanks for all the information.